What are we doing, 88?
88.
In the field of philosophy, there is no authority and no absolute truth. In the field of philosophy, there is no authority and no absolute truth. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, University of everything else in the world, here in Campo, California, with my dog Rex in the bathroom barking his head off, wanting to come out and enjoy us, because he is a great philosopher. In the field of philosophy, there is no authority and no absolute truth. I have been training Ellen and Ingeborg and Sylvia and everybody else that has been here, and I've been saying, okay, in the field of philosophy, there's no authority and there's no absolute truth. So, my dears, say what you want. No one can tell you you're wrong. Say whatever comes to your mind, and no one can ever. Well, that's not a responsible attitude. That's not a responsible way of doing it. It's a very responsible way. If you will just follow your own intuition, your own inner illumination, you'll be right. Because where is this coming from? So you're going to write a book. You sit down, and you write a book, and you say, hey, that's pretty good. And so someone says, give a talk. Oh, how do I give a talk? The same way you write a book. Just talk just like you write a book. And when you give a talk like that, your talk is exciting and illuminating. Well, will it be a good one? It'll be in perfect English. It'll be well-structured. It'll be well-planned. You'll have an introduction. You'll have a body, and you'll have a conclusion. You'll have a perfect talk. You'll have everything. It'll be just perfect. So just let it go. Let it go. Believe in yourself, because in the field of philosophy, there's no authority and no absolute truth. Where do you think these various philosophers got their philosophy from? They listened to themselves. Can you imagine the early philosophers, seriously now, can you imagine the early philosophies reading each other's books? I had a friend of mine who wrote a great book, and I complimented him on the book, and I said, would he please read my book and give me his opinion? He says, I'd rather not. And I said, you don't want to read my book? He says, no. He says, I am writing books, and I don't want to take ideas from you. So if I read your books, I'm going to take ideas from you. He says, I'd rather have these ideas come from my own inspiration. Now, if I'm on the same channel that you are on, well and good. He says, but I write my own books, and I want to be on my own channel, and you have to admire a person for that. Mm-hmm. I had another student who read The Art and Science of Wholeness and liked it so much, he put his name on the inside cover and his name on the back and so forth, and put it out that he wrote it. And I told him, I said, John, that's perfectly okay, you can do that, but people will recognize that my copyright came before yours, and it's not your style. It's not your style at all. And until his death, he was still a very good friend and a very wonderful boy who was doing these great things. His family worshipped him. His family thought he was the greatest guy in the world. When he died, the tributes that were given to him were just utterly amazing. Tributes I'm sure I'll never experience, but the thing is, he was just fantastic. I'm not going to die. He was just really a fantastic guy. And John Lawrence, a wonderful guy. But I've had others who did the same thing. And I say, you know, duplication copying is the greatest compliment you can give a person. If somebody copies what you write and takes credit for it, boy, that's quite an honor. You know, really. Because if you wrote it and you put it out and you know it, there's no cover on this chair at all. Well, that's wonderful. So I stick to it. thanks a lot. You know, my family, I have to train them that when the we're going to give our lecture, we put the dogs away so they don't bark. And we put the things on the chair, yeah, so that we don't stick to them. You know, when you have short pants on these naga hide chairs, that you stick to it. Are you done? Rex, get your nose out. Rex is trying to help them straighten out the towel under my bottom on the chairs. Yeah, now you wag your tail. Yeah. So you see, Herb, you have the most disjointed presentation there that I've heard in an entire life. In the field of philosophy, there's no authority and no absolute truth. Hey, I'm just doing stream of consciousness. And you're listening to stream of consciousness. And you are in stream of consciousness all the time. You're always in stream of consciousness. I had a dear, beloved friend who wrote me a wonderful stream of consciousness letter. And I think she's just a fabulous lady. And when she got done, she said, please excuse the mistakes and please excuse the bad grammar and my putting together these things, but it's just a stream of consciousness report. And I didn't say it, and she'll probably hear this and know that I said it, but stream of consciousness tells where your consciousness is. If you are a thinker who thinks in an organized, patterned way, you'll write in an organized, patterned way. And your stream of consciousness will be in an organized, patterned way. Well, Herb, your stream of consciousness sure got off whack there a couple times. Yes, it did. But do you know why and how? And you see, if I were presenting this, and knowing I'm presenting this, I would whack off those things, you know. I'd leave out those things because they have no relevance. Or do they have relevance?
They do.
Do they have relevance? Stop and think about it. Now, this lady who wrote The Stream of Consciousness with all of its, was, what she wrote was so charming, was so compelling to read, that if it hadn't been that for her dots and her dashes and things like that throughout, I probably would never have read it as completely and as fast as I did. But it just was a flow. Everything unimportant for what she wanted to say was not there. And that's magic. That's what happens when you train yourself to let it flow. Just let it flow. Don't really care what you're saying, why you're saying it. If you are an organized person in your thinking, if you believe in yourself, that's being an organized person. If you believe in yourself, everything you do will be correct. Everything you do will be wonderful. Everything you do will be fantastic. Like, we go back again to that story about the kid who was teaching this other kid how to do geometry, remember? Mm. And he was a naughty boy, and so his principal told him, one of the things you have to do because you've been a bad boy is, or you'd be dumped out of school, is to go in this underprivileged school where these people are disadvantaged and work with them. And so this kid, knowing it all, he went to work with this kid, and this kid in this other school, and the kid in the other school, he always had that basketball in his hand, you know, his mind was a million miles away, and he was not interested in learning. He was not interested in anything. And the boy said, phew, I'm not going to let this get to me. I'm going to use my brain. He didn't say that out loud. That's what he did. And so the next scene shows him with the boy on the basketball court saying, okay, now you want to shoot this basket from here to there. What angle are you to the court and what angle are you to the ball? And you, an isosceles triangle. Oh, that's interesting. And when you're over here, you're an equilateral. And here you're, you know, what are you doing? And the guy says, oh, makes sense. Yeah, now I see some reason for learning that stuff. Yeah. And his attitude changed because this kid had the talent, I guess is a good word for it, to stream of consciousness with him and just flow with him and let him, you know, get onto these things, you know. My dog is giving my leg a bath, and after 5 minutes, it gets a little raw. You have to remind him that that's not necessary. So, you see, this is what we want to do. Stream of consciousness can be a tremendous tool of opening up our inner reservoir of wisdom and our inner reservoir of illumination. We have hidden that reservoir of illumination so much because, what, it's okay, hey, never say no to somebody, our guest.
Okay.
You know, but it's okay, it won't hurt a thing. We just pick up the ripped up napkin.
You won't lick your leg for a while.
Yeah, it has a purpose. It has a purpose. I mean, she's been around. She's got dogs, too.
Yeah, my sharp stuff, too.
Yeah. But, and it's easier to do that than to put a bandage on my leg. But, so, The stream of consciousness is the way we want to go. And you always want to be coming back to your subject, even though you think you're being divergent from your subject, because it's not being divergent. It is using your imagination. It is showing that when you have the flow, you are never lost. You are never away from your subject. You are never away from the flow of that illumination that is within you. You want that to go and go and go. And you want to help the kid learn basketball. What is it?
Basket
geometry. Oh, geometry. You want to help the kid learn geometry.
Yeah,
that's right, you know. Yes, yeah, see? Just checking. So you want to help the kid learn geometry. And so if he loves basketball, then boom, 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 boom. What? How can geometry work into basketball? You know, how can it work into football? How can it work into tennis? How can it work into anything? Ellen used to love tennis all the time, and she was quite good. But Ellen was stupid because she couldn't teach anybody tennis. And you know why she couldn't teach anybody tennis? Because she did it intuitively. She knew where that ball was. She knew when it was going to arrive there. She knew how her tennis racket should be approaching that ball. She knew all these things. And how do you describe that? How do you describe? You be that. You are that. Now, teachers who describe it are not doers. They're not great tennis players. Because a great tennis player will never be a teacher. Because the minute you become a teacher, you try to figure out why you're doing what you're doing, and you lose the skill of doing it. When you just let it flow and you are the genius you are, then the intuitive wisdom continues to come out. Now, my friend wrote, and she said that her that Ellen reminded her of her friend
Maddie.
Her friend Maddie, who she worked with in social services in Minneapolis, had a son. And this son was had a great problem. His mind was very stressed. His mind was very, very busy. Because he couldn't go to sleep. Because he was listening to an inner music. And he had to write it down. It's like Mozart, you know. He had to write it down whether he liked it or not. And so Beethoven, Bach, and the rest of them had the same thing, I'm sure. And many other geniuses have that. Michelangelo certainly didn't just paint during the daylight. When an inspiration hit him, he took a torch, you know. Or he took a lantern, whatever he had, and he went in there and painted. Well, we too. When the inspiration hits us, go to it. There are times that I sit at my computer, and remember, I used to do this quite often, and I would just go through the night. I'd just type away because the ideas were just pouring out, and so I had them pour out. Maybe they could have been polished a little bit better, but I didn't worry about that. I just let them pour. I just let them go, and it was great. This is what we want to learn to do. In the field of philosophy, there's no authority and no absolute truth. There is no given program for what goes on. And the reason that there's no given is because inspiration cannot have a channel. Mm. Channel, you say, yes. You are inspiration. You're not the channel. You are inspiration because you have an idea coming from here. You have another idea coming from here, another one from here, another one from here. And you put those together and you make some great philosophical concepts come to life where she might have the same concept, but different ideas come together in her life, and she spells those concepts out in what? In baking a cake. And you spell it out in writing music. And you spell it out in shoveling the sidewalk, you know? No, everyone spells it out in their own unique way. And this is why we never discourage. Now, you say shoveling the sidewalk. What the heck does that mean? I've used that illustration before. I love to shovel the sidewalk.
Me too.
And I always shovel it to the edges, even if sometimes the snow would go straight up and down like that on the side. But I always shovel it to the edge. I always made it a work of art. And I liked to make my work of art before anyone was around. I didn't want anyone seeing me do it. Not because I was thinking it was silly, but because it was my creation. I was in my creation time. And when I was done, then I would go and have breakfast, and people would come along and say, somebody shoveled their sidewalk pretty clean here, you know. And if they might have said also, what a magnificent artist was at work here. Uh-huh. What a creation. Uh-huh. Now, that was what I said. Now, what they said, I'll never know. But, you see, I did it because it was a joy to me. I did it because I was the absolute philosopher. I was the one who was making these decisions. In the field of philosophy, there's no authority and there's no absolute truth, because there's no way for someone to tell you what you're supposed to think. No way for someone to tell you what you're supposed to know and believe. No way for anyone to do that, you see. It's only up to you. It's only up to you. Hey, Rex. Rex. Down. Down. Stay. I have to tell her the story again. There was a farmer, remember? And the farmer had a mule. And the mule was pulling his cart. You may have heard the story. The mule was pulling the farmer's cart, and then the mule decided to sit down, and he would not get up. And so the farmer pulled and yanked and carroted him and everything, but he wouldn't do it. And so the neighbor came along and said, "What's the matter, Farmer Jones?" He said, "Well, my mule just won't pull the wagon for me." And the other farmer says, "Well, you want me to help you?" "Oh, would you?" And so the other farmer went to the fence, and he got a fence post. And when he got the fence post, he took the fence post and he clobbered the mule on the top of the head. And the farmer said, "That's terrible. You hurt the mule." "No, no, no. You have to get his attention. You see?" And so he got his attention, and then the mule pulled the wagon and went right about his business.
I would too.
Because he would too. Because he was just being a little obstinate, perhaps being a teenager, and he wanted to do his own thing rather than what the farmer wanted him to do. Now, what about you guys? What sort of a routine are you going through? Are you going through the routine where in the field of philosophy there's no authority and no absolute truth, so therefore you're not going to bother with philosophy? Or are you realizing that every day of your life you're living philosophy? Every day of your life you are doing things in a very beautiful philosophical way. Every day you are creating that wonderful Trojan horse. You are creating that wonderful David out of a piece of marble that is completely invisible. You are creating all the things you want to create every day. And you're creating them because you're in the stream of consciousness. You're letting your mind flow with all of the beautiful ideas that are there all the time. And you're in the field of philosophy. There's no authority, no absolute truth. You are that authority. And you are that absolute truth. And so therefore, as you do that, then you're doing just great. You're doing just great because you're the master. And as long as you're the master, you can do anything you want. And you see, you're not doing it for somebody else. You're doing it for yourself. Mozart never played the piano or wrote a piece of music for anybody else, even though presumably he wrote it for somebody else because they hired him to do it. But he wrote it for himself. They wanted the music to say a certain thing, so he said, "Let's see, how would I say that? Okay, this is how I would say it." And he wrote it, and of course it was what they wanted, because they knew his style. But it was his style, and it was him at all times. And this is what you are. So follow these thoughts, and don't laugh at yourself, because you're really quite brilliant. You really are filled with a lot of grand and beautiful ideas. And one of these days, you'll bring them forth, whether you're going to do it with a paintbrush, or with a computer, or having a child. Do any of you ever, have you ever had a child? And don't answer yes or no, because those of you who may have had a child maybe didn't have a child. Maybe the child just happened in your world. But did you have a child that you raised as the greatest genius that ever walked the face of the earth? Do you think of your child as being one of the most magnificent young people that ever existed? Do you think of your child as expressing the magnificence and genius of itself? Or do you think, he could be better? No. You could have better vision and see him the way he really is. Now, when are you going to have a child? When are you going to have yourself as a child and see yourself in the marvelous vision that you're available to be seen in? When are you going to do that? You're going to wait until you're dead? Move into another dimension? I mean, why wait? Why wait? My brother Ray was a jerk. For years and years he was a jerk. He ran away from all of us because he didn't think he was worthy. And then I told him, I said, Ray, you're wonderful. I said, I love you because you're my brother. I said, I don't care what lifestyle you had. I don't care what you have ever done. However you've been mean to me or anything like that. I don't care. It doesn't mean a thing to me. You know, I love you. You're my brother. And whether this helped him or not, I don't know. I believe it did. But from that moment on, he started to be one of the most beautiful people you could ever imagine. And you can talk to Ellen about him, or Sylvia, or Ingeborg, or anybody here that knows him, and they'll say, oh, yeah, he's a great, great guy. A great, great guy. But he didn't know that for a long time. Or I didn't know it, I guess. And the minute I found out about it in my own consciousness, then that's what he became, and that's what he was in our world. And that's really great. And that's what it is for us, too. We become great in our consciousness the minute we wake up to the realization that we are the great philosopher. You see, there is no authority for philosophy and no absolute truth except what you think and what you believe. Are you ready? The microphone was pointed over that direction all the time.
Well, yes.
Yes. Okay, yes. I'm ready too. So I see you all. What am I seeing you as? In the field of philosophy, there's no authority, no absolute truth. I see each one of you as the consistent, marvelous stream of consciousness of the beauty, the magnificence, and the goodness that's within you right now and forevermore. I love you, 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 I love you.
I love you, love you, love you, love you.